Well, thank you. It's very nice to be here. I'm going to be focusing on the nutrition side of things in the school setting and focusing on process evaluation measures of an experiential foods program for elementary school children. Whoop. There we go. I'd like to acknowledge my colleagues with the Cooking with Kids program, my evaluation team that includes Barbara Losey from Penn State University, and CSU graduate student team. So a little bit first about the Cooking with Kids program. They have been in existence for about 12 years. They provide hands-on experience with fresh, healthy foods from diverse cultures to K through 6th grade students in 12 schools in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And in this past year, in those 12 schools, you can see about 4,200 students. They had cooking classes, fruit and vegetable tasting classes, which I'll describe in just a few minutes. And they were the most popular venue for parent participation. About half the parents who volunteered in the schools did so with the cooking programs. So just briefly, the program includes cooking classes, fruit and vegetable tastings, school lunch, and they have an active farm to school program. And the curriculum in the classroom helps to meet academic standards, including math, language arts, social studies, science, and of course, health education. Here is a picture of students mugging for the camera a little bit, but this really sort of depicts in the cooking classes, which are 2 hours in length. There are six cooking classes throughout the year. Each focuses on a meal, a meatless meal, but from one continent around the world. The students typically are in groups of three, one with the Cooking with Kids food educator, one with a classroom teacher, and one with one or more parent volunteers. This is a picture of a young man in a melon tasting. They were tasting. Isn't that an intriguing picture? So he's really into smelling the aroma of a cantaloupe. But they typically are investigating, exploring four different varieties of foods. In this one, it was obviously melon. They had cantaloupe and several other types of melon. And these are teacher-led, one-hour tastings. So they're less intensive than the cooking classes, but they include, They learn the names, the growing habits. They read farmers' letters. They describe the growing process. They do a lot of vocabulary describing the differences between the different varieties that they're experiencing that day, as well as voting for which was their favorite variety. And then Cooking with Kids inspired lunches. You can imagine that the recipe and the preparation methods for preparing a meal in a classroom is much different than what you would need to do in order to prepare it in the cafeteria for hundreds of children. But there are two Cooking with Kids inspired meals served in all the elementary schools in the district twice monthly. The little girl on the right has a Cooking with Kids inspired meal. The girl on the left had a more standard school lunch. Okay, so now to my role. I come from the academic setting. I was at the University of New Mexico until recently, and this project is now spanning two states. But one of the stories that I want to communicate today is the effectiveness of this partnership and our participatory evaluation approach. So I'm the nutrition educator and evaluator. My partners with Cooking with Kids are not from that field, restaurateurs and chefs. And so they specifically developed this project with food educators as opposed to nutrition educators. So I think it's a really good approach. We obtained funding, a smaller amount of funding, to develop an evaluation plan. They didn't really have a formal evaluation plan. They were collecting student feedback, teacher feedback, parent feedback, but with No Child Left Behind and all of the pressures on schools, there was more pressure to say, well, what does this program do? And so throughout with our pilot project, then we developed a logic model, a student assessment instrument. We interviewed teachers, parents, and people from elsewhere who had purchased or obtained the curriculum to learn about their experiences. We then obtained larger funding to support a full-scale evaluation, all the while using a very participatory evaluation approach. So what that looks like is we just had a meeting last week, in fact, but we discussed the purpose of the evaluation or the purpose of a particular evaluation strategy. We identify the most appropriate way to go about it. What are the key questions we really want to address? The evaluation team then goes out and pilots the instrument, reports the information back, and so we refine our process that way. And I think we really make sure then that we're not missing the mark. As external evaluators, sometimes we can miss the mark, but working in this way I think has been really effective. This is an example of our logic model that we developed. You're probably all familiar with the logic models. In the left column are the inputs, all the things that go into the program, the resources, the people, students, parents, the curriculum, et cetera, the space. The activities, then, is the second column, and those are the things that actually take place in the classroom. At the classroom level are the tasting and the cooking classes. The family level, there are recipes sent home. Certainly families are involved in volunteering, and then cafeteria meals. Then we propose what are reasonable short-term outcomes from this. We focused on fruits and vegetables, especially. You see it, fruit, vegetable, and grain up there, but we assume that there will be increases in preferences for a variety of fruits and vegetables, decreased neophobia, improved fruit and vegetable related attitudes. Then we get into the whole cooking, improved attitudes with cooking, self-efficacy with cooking, families perhaps preparing these meals at home, down to at the cafeteria, positive role modeling of fruit and vegetable consumption, a positive social context. Longer term are those intermediate outcomes on the far right that have to do, we hope, with continued preference for fruits and vegetables, increased consumption. We know preference usually precedes consumption. Improved preparation skills, cooking skills for students and their families, social norms, improved social norms for eating fruits and vegetables. Ultimately, we can't say this will directly lead to obesity prevention, but we know it's a part of the solution. So the research design then that we developed for our full-scale study is a pre-post quasi-experimental, 11 participating schools, 3 conditions. So we have schools that have the full intervention. That means the taste, the food educator-led cooking classes and the teacher-led tasting classes. The partial intervention is the tasting classes only, and some of those schools are calling it tasting with kids, not cooking with kids, because they recognize they're not actually doing the cooking. And then we have comparison schools with no intervention. We have 2 cohorts of 4th graders. We'll have about 1,200 students altogether. Our research hypotheses are that compared to non-treatment condition intervention students will report greater cooking self-efficacy, cooking attitudes, preference for fruits and vegetables, and intake of fruits and vegetables. Note, we're not really focusing on knowledge, but on skills and behaviors and things related to those. And then students receiving the more intensive intervention with the cooking and the tasting classes will report higher scores related to those only receiving the tasting class. So in more intense intervention, we expect greater outcomes. So where we are finished with phase 1, which was our formative assessment and our instrument refinement. I'll talk to you a little bit about that. We're in the midst of phase 2 now. We have 2 cohorts of 4th grade students with our full-scale intervention, so all through last year, and we've begun data collection this year. And then our final component next year and into 2010 is dissemination of what we've learned through the New Mexico Cooperative Extension Program. So we're working now on identifying the most effective training mechanism to support the dissemination of this program beyond the Santa Fe. The question is it just a Santa Fe effect, or can we effectively disseminate and implement this elsewhere? So from our phase one formative assessment, we have developed and done the validation and reliability of two instruments, one focusing on the cooking self-efficacy and attitudes and fruit and vegetable preferences, and another, a classroom-administered dietary recall. For those of you who are in the pursuit of that holy grail of valid and reliable dietary intake of students, we're working with a classroom-administered one. We've modified one developed in the UK called the Day in the Life Questionnaire. We think our results are pretty good. We're also looking at parent outcomes. I'm not going to describe those in any detail, but we've done parent surveys, and we're currently conducting focus group interviews with parents about the impact of this program on them as volunteers and on the home environment. Where I want to focus, though, are on some of our process evaluation measures. We've conducted teacher surveys. We've developed interview guides with principals, food educators, and cafeteria managers, and we've conducted interviews with those folks. But we've also looked at classroom cooking and tasting observations, so we've developed observation forms there and in the cafeteria as well, and we've had good to excellent inter-observer reliability, so we're confident those are good forms. Just some students taking the surveys in the classroom. So in this second phase, the full-scale implementation, again, this past school year and the current school year, the student surveys, the parent surveys and focus groups, and then the process evaluation measures. So I'll be focusing on talking to you about the cooking and tasting classroom observations, but we did also complete an observation form when we complete the survey with the students. We really care about the process in which the data is being collected from the students, wanting to make sure there wasn't a fire alarm or some kind of disruption, that there wasn't some really uncomfortable situation that might influence the responses that students make. I think I'm going to move on to give you some examples then of what we looked at. So in the classroom observation, this is the first page of the two-page classroom observation form. And what I'd like to say is this was developed from our prior work. Obviously, you want to make sure that all of the components of the lesson plan are on your form and so that you can check off that they were conducted or not. And we were fairly lenient. I mean, we recognize that each teacher has their own teaching style, each food educator their own style. So we were fairly lenient in our instructions, but we wanted to check off. Obviously, you want to see, is the intervention being implemented as intended? So we focused on fidelity to the curriculum. But a couple of other things we focused on is, so you can see the fidelity was very high for the food educator-led cooking observation. And we were there, so they knew they were being observed, so that certainly has an influence. But we also looked at classroom management, how well the class was managed through the four phases of the cooking class, not just the food preparation and tasting, but some of the other times, and engagement, how actively were students engaged in the process? Students, teacher, volunteers, etc. So these are some new things that I think we've contributed meaningfully to the literature. So that was all pretty good. We had tasting observation forms, similar structure, less intensive. They were about half the length in time. This is the second half of the page, and you can see where we focused on classroom management in the preparation, information, and tasting phases of the lesson, and then engagement of the students, the teacher, and if there were any volunteers. The results from that, you can see the fidelity was not as high with the teacher-led as with the food educator-led cooking classes, something to be expected, but important to know. And there was never before any real documentation of this. But you can see teachers' classroom management was good. And student engagement was good as well throughout. And again, there had never been this assessment of what really went on in a tasting class before. We did something similar with cafeteria meals, and we focused on, was the cooking with kids meal served that was on the menu? And we also looked at, the term was appeal. We were focused on fruits and vegetables. This was an offer versus serve situation. So we would document of the fruits and vegetables that were offered, what percentage or what number of students took them. That gives us a sense of how interested they were in choosing those fruits and vegetables and more than likely going to eat them. So we did a similar kind of form for the cafeteria observation, again to assess, was the cafeteria component implemented as intended, and what were the outcomes? And this one in particular, we were able to do at all conditions, so the cooking and tasting schools, the tasting only schools, and our comparison schools. And it will be interesting to see, we haven't teased apart the results yet, but of the 24 cafeteria meals observed last year, we had about a 75% fidelity rate and about 62% overall appeal of fruits and vegetables. As I said, we haven't separated those out yet. But in conclusion, I just wanted to say that we developed, tested, and implemented a variety of outcome and process measures. We had a successful use of participatory evaluation strategies, and I would just encourage you to utilize this method for the kinds of public health interventions that you might be developing. Thank you.
We do have time for one question.
You know, I don't think it really makes sense. We're not focusing on reducing calories or necessarily